Well, we ordinarily record the show a day after things have turned around and we don't have quite as much to complain about. And yesterday, when we were talking about when we were going to record the show and we decided on today, we were like, well, they'll probably go out and then score a bunch of runs in what would have been Wednesday night's game, and they'll get us off their backs for a little while.
They did not do that.
Didn't happen.
They did not do that.
No, yeah. That was not the case, unfortunately. And so with that, we welcome you into the latest furious edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. No, not really. I'm Tyler Mullen.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
And this is episode 134, because last week was 130
Larry Walker.
One Larry Royker. And hey, thanks for joining
us.
This week's episode of the show, we are going to be talking, you know, the fact that they have a bad offense. I don't know. That's a topic we haven't really discussed much. But then we're going to get into a ton of really good-ass PDPs, which we're very excited about. But... you know, I think perspective, very important. The Rockies just went on a 9-game road trip through San Diego, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, and they came home 4-5 and in first place in the division.
Could have been worse.
It could have been much worse.
Could have been better.
And, as Dan Lucero said yesterday on Twitter, if you would have said that 5 years ago to any of us, oh, the first place Rockies are returning home after going 4-5 on a 3-series swing through the West Coast, you probably would be pretty thrilled with that. Or as Dan said, he would have shivved a hobo back then.
You would have thrown a damn parade.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, when you keep things in line with perspective, that's good. They're also 26-24, which is the second worst mark among division-leading teams. They are 3 wins worse than the next best division-leading team in the National League, which is the Atlanta Braves, who are 10 games over 500, by the way. The Braves are 29-19. The Rockies are 26-24, so they've played 4 fewer games, if my math is correct, which it probably isn't.
Hey, I didn't go to math college, all right?
50, and that's... I don't know. they just like I don't know what to think about any of this.
You know, it's I liked your comment on perspective because it came up last night.
Yeah,
we were just having this discussion before we actually started recording that. You know, there was a comment from At Rockies at us last night. Not at us necessarily, just saying, you know, in general, that this is one of the oddest seasons that they've faced as a Twitter account because the team's in first place. Teams in is inherently doing well in a way because they're over 500. They're in first place. It is almost June. That is great. But they told us, for whatever reason, this season has brought out the worst in Rockies Twitter. To be honest, it's been downright disappointing at times.
That was a quote?
That was a quote.
Okay.
So, and, you know, because everyone last night was complaining about the offense and why is anybody doing anything. And we've said this many times on the podcast. Please do not direct your anger to at Rockies.
Yeah.
It is not at Rockies.
They don't make decisions on what is good and what is not about the on-field product.
They do not make any decisions of that kind. Do not direct your anger toward at Rockies at any point. Do not tag them in your mean tweets. That is just stupid. It is childish. Do not do it.
You can complain about the Rockies on Twitter, but yes. Tagging the Rockies in your complaint, that doesn't like get funneled through to Jeff Breidich. He's not like monitoring the Menchies to be like, oh, well, maybe we should do something about the offense. People on Twitter are upset.
No.
not the case.
No, and that's fine. They shouldn't. Because people on Twitter are stupid. Twitter is not real life. We are stupid. Everybody is stupid on Twitter.
God,
everyone is at their worst on Twitter.
Some of us are the worst versions of ourselves, like, with regularity on Twitter.
Yes. So, that being said, there is this issue with perspective. This year, the team is, like I said, in first place, 2 games over 500. But there are clearly flaws with this team.
Yeah. And I do take issue with... the assertion, I find it a little insulting, this has been worse than ever and it's been disappointing. If your fans having expectations and voicing their disappointment in a team not fulfilling those expectations so far, I don't think categorizing that as this has been terrible and to a certain extent it's been disappointing, I think that's extremely unfair.
I think so, too.
I will say that. I'm disappointed in that response from at Rockies because I think it ignores the reason why, and we've talked about this, and it's kind of a weird thing to wrap your mind around, but the reason why, for example, everybody is all over Ian Desmond is because we all want Ian Desmond to be successful.
Yeah, if Ian Desmond was playing well, we'd be thrilled about it.
Exactly, and like everybody wants Ian Desmond to be playing well, and there is a line that gets crossed, and I should point out, like, we don't deal with the vitriol that At Rockies deals with, so the stuff that they've had to wade through is infinitely worse than what most of us could imagine, but if the people who conflate Ian Desmond's struggles on the field with just shitting all over Ian Desmond as a human being, those people are the worst, and get off of Twitter, and get off of social media, and get off of your life because
and go
sucks.
Yeah, just go live in the mountains somewhere where you can't bother anybody.
Like, nobody likes you, go away, you're terrible. But it is possible to criticize a baseball player and a baseball team and leave it at criticizing the baseball player and the baseball team for their performance and that being fine. Like, it used to be in society that talking about sports was like this haven away from everything else on the planet. And you could talk about sports and you could debate the performances and the merits and the struggles and everything else about a team and a player. And that was the conversation. To say Ian Desmond is struggling and all he does is hit weak ground balls to the right side is not to say Ian Desmond is a bad father and a terrible person. Like, Ryan Spielberg went on MLB Network Radio the other day and was talking about, I've never seen a player turn on, the public turn on a player like they've turned on Ian Desmond. First of all, I think Jose Reyes would probably disagree with that, deservedly so.
Yeah.
Second of all, to say, because then Spilly's argument was Ian Desmond, when he drives in a run, he donates $1,000 to a charity, and that's great. He's such a good guy. Nobody is saying that he's a bad guy. Like, that, the fallacy of you can't criticize Ian Desmond because he's a good human being, I don't agree with that. And so I think, again, At Rockies deals with so much garbage that we don't deal with, but I think if it's restricted to just the people who are saying this offense is performing poorly, this player is especially performing poorly, I wish that there was something that would change so this team could be better, to suggest, like, well, it's disappointing how upset these people are this year, it's been the worst of Rockies Twitter. People have expectations for this team. They believe this team is supposed to be good, and because they're frustrated that this team is not playing its best, that shouldn't be something that's reflecting the worst of Rockies Twitter. That means that you've built a successful product, and people are excited to see it be successful, and they want to see it be successful.
Yeah,
so, and that I take a little bit of issue with.
That's the thing. The expectations for this team are different than what the expectations were for the team in 2005.
Yeah.
They know this team has talent. They know this team made the playoffs last year, and they have a chance to make the playoffs again this year. With the rest of the NL West being so crappy, you can see the path the Rockies have to potentially taking home their first ever NL West title. The opportunity is there for the Rockies, and the team has made one non-Pat Valeka related roster move this month.
Yep.
They have made one roster move at all in the last 2.5 weeks. And that was to recall Pat Valeka from AAA 6 days after they sent him down. You want to know what's going on in that time for the Rockies? Well, in that time, the Rockies have not been playing their best baseball. They're 5-9 in that time since their last major league roster move. They are averaging 3.6 runs per game in that time, hitting .229 as a team. They have struck out 129 times in 14 games. That is not good. And it's in a time when the D-backs are in a complete free fall. The Dodgers, they'll win 85 games and win the division now, because that's how this NL West is shaping up right now.
Yeah, it's
not going to take a superhuman effort by the Rockies to potentially win the National League West, and they are not doing a thing about the one piece of their team that is clearly wrong, and that is the offense. There has been not even a whiff of any kind of transactions going forward. And it's even worse that we're seeing every other guy in Albuquerque having an incredible season so far. And I know Albuquerque is one of those places in the minor leagues, in the PCL, that inflates offense. We know that. We saw Mike Tauchman play here. He looks so overmatched for the first month. He's gone down to AAA, and he's hitting .391 with 8 bombs and 28 ribbies in 29 games. Yep. We know that Albuquerque inflates offense. That is fine. But when you have so many people at the big league level hitting worse than most pitchers, or at least the same line as most pitchers, that's when you see the problem. Why aren't some steps being taken to try something different? DJ LeMahieu is not coming back anytime soon. He is still going to be taking dry swings, whatever the hell that means, tomorrow at Coors Field. He's not close to coming back. Second base is a black hole right now. You have prospects in AAA. They are just dying down there. There's nothing else for them to prove in AAA. I'm talking about Ryan McMahon. He is a guy, nothing left to prove in Albuquerque. And he's played second base. He's played third base. He's played first base. He can be your major league versatility guy that Pat Baleka is right now, because Pat Baleka so far has been the worst hitter in baseball. And it's not saying he's a bad person. That's not what we're conflating. This is the whole point. Pat Baleka is not a bad person. He's had a great story. He is not
He's not a Pat Baleka player right now.
He's had 880 plate appearances this year. And he's got an OPS under 400. He's been given 80 plate appearances. 80. Only player with that many plate appearances to have an OPS under 400 is Pat Baleka this year. Like, at some point, like, it's not about being a nice guy. It's about putting the best 25 people on your roster at the big league level, and the Rockies are not doing that in the slightest right now. That's the problem.
Two things about that. One, I think he hit the nail on the head. And Pat Baleka is – there is time for Pat Baleka. And we've discussed – and maybe I'm going to die on this hill, but I still think Pat Baleka can be a very good, very valuable asset to a major league team. The positional versatility, all that kind of stuff. I mean, we saw last year Pat Baleka can be an effective major league hitter. And I think a lot of this is a guy going through – somewhat of a sophomore slump. Pat Baleka comes up. He fares pretty well in his first real major league action last season after a good start to the year in AAA, and then comes back in 2018, and he struggled. You know how many guys that happens to? That happens to a lot of people in their major league careers. Last year, Pat Baleka plays in 110 games, and he batted .258, .284, .533. It's an .817 OPS. Do you want him to get on base more? Sure. Would you like him to hit a little better? I don't even know if you really like a .258
average.
He's a pinch
hitter. Yeah, whatever.
Exactly. That's fine.
A pincher getting one start a week, something like that, to have an 800 OPS? You take that every single day.
That's fine. But Pat Baleka, like, he's 25 years old. He's got time, and guys can still adjust. He's coming through his second tour through the major leagues. Pitchers have adjusted to him. I think Pat Baleka is a very intelligent kid. I think he's a very good baseball player. I think he'll probably get it figured out. Pat Baleka eventually is going to be okay, whether it's in Colorado or somewhere else. But the fact of the matter is, he has been in AAA this year for 5 games. He's been in the major leagues for 36 games. Like Anthony said, he's gotten 80 plate appearances. And even at AAA, in the 5 games that he played there, he went 3-17. So it's just not working right now for Pat Baleka. Yeah. And that's fine. That's okay. You're a 25-year-old baseball player. He was only drafted 5 years ago. Like, this isn't like they're trotting out some dude who is at the tail end of his major league career and you're thinking, well, what is he up here for when you got a top prospect? Like, Pat, they're still talking about
like Cargo. Right, oh, I just depressed myself.
So depressing. Oh, we'll man. Get to that as well
oh,
today.
Man.
But like the fact that you have options elsewhere that you refuse to use, and it's not like it's not a Super 2 scenario. It's not as though Ryan McMahon hasn't been up and you're trying to suppress his service time. It's not like I don't get any of this, and he's gone to AAA and he's played substantial time at second base there. And maybe it's just that Ryan McMahon is a bad second baseman. Like, that, I have not evaluated Ryan McMahon in second base.
Sure.
And that's entirely possible. He was drafted as a corner infielder, or as a third baseman. They moved him to first base so he can play both corner infield spots. And he has played significant time at second base over the last couple of seasons in the minor leagues. Maybe it's just a very substandard second base. I understand that. However, is a reverse Tony Walter situation
right?
Not,
I was just going to say that.
Not a positive there. I mean, if Ryan McMahon can come up and can give you something offensively, but is going to be 60% of the defensive second baseman that DJ LeMahieu is, while DJ's out, are you sacrificing that much? Like, I don't understand the argument of, well, he's not good enough to be in the lineup defensively. There are a whole lot of guys in this team that aren't good to be in the lineup offensively, and they're on this team.
Yep. And it's not like he's gone down there and hasn't played second base. Like, it's even weirder that he, like, remember his first game, he went back down there and it was like, oh, we'll put you at second base. It's like, oh, so we're doing that. He's made five starts at second base since going down to Albuquerque this year. So, like, they're trying it, you know?
Yep.
He's played 15 games at first, five at second. It's not like he's just like, all right, Ryan, we're going to go down, send you down to AAA, play exclusively first base, work on your stuff there. Then when you're ready, we'll come you back up. Clearly, that's not the case.
I think the topic that seems to be more the issue this week is not, I mean, because the offensive issues are the same that we have talked about over the last several weeks.
Ad nauseum.
The topic to me seems to be, it is possible to criticize a player or criticize an aspect of a team without criticizing those people as human beings. It's okay to point out that Ian Desmond is a bad baseball player right now while simultaneously acknowledging, I've pointed this out a million times, Ian Desmond last year and Scott Oberg, I do the Sports Buddies program through Big Brothers Big Sisters of Colorado, Ian Desmond and Scott Oberg came out for the baseball camp Rockies Day at Lakewood High School last year. Ian Desmond, to my little brother, could not have been a nicer human being. Encouraging him on the way, he'd chase down fly balls, telling him how much he loved how the kid was smiling the whole time. Like, such a good dude. Such a good dude. And I got a chance to talk to Ian a little bit after the camp and was hanging around with his kids in the dugout. And, like, a very, very good human being. A very admirable human being. What he does with his charity work, what he does in the community is fantastic. Nobody is trying to impugn that. Nobody is trying to suggest that because Ian Desmond is struggling at the plate, he's a bad person. And that bothers me because I think it does a disservice to an intelligent conversation. It's possible to have a conversation on the merits of an athlete and on the merits of a team without bringing something along the lines of a discussion of that person's humanity into question. Like, they're not the same. It's not a one and the same type of issue. It's okay to have a conversation about what can be done to make a baseball team better while ignoring everything outside of that conversation. And I think we're in a world now where everything is tied up with outrage, where you have to get fired up about something. But to just acknowledge, like, there's a problem, and we can all agree on the fact that there's a problem, what's so bad about that? Nobody's trying to say that Ian Desmond's a bad person. Nobody's trying to say that Pavlik is a bad person. But if the Colorado Rockies want to win the most winnable National League West in the history of this franchise, a franchise that, mind you, has never won the National League West, this team is not going to win it. And it's like, and okay that's what to sucks. Acknowledge it's, that yeah. as it is.
It's an ad hominem argument, you know, when you try to make your point by undercutting something else about a completely unrelated topic.
Yeah.
And that's what sucks because, you know, Spilly can go on air and say that, you know, well, Ian Desmond's a good guy, so nobody should complain about him hitting under the Mendoza line. It's like, well, no, that's – now you're just trying to make it about something different completely.
Yeah.
And that's not the way the discourse can come out on top. You know, this is not really the time when discourse ever happens anymore. Discourse is dead. It's at this point, it seems like Twitter killed it.
That's true.
But and that's the issue. You know, there's no way to go and criticize anybody with the major league team unless you want to make them a bad person. That's where, like, I get Spilly. He's a former player.
Yeah.
He knows the drill there. I'm sure he had that at his time with the Rockies, and, you know, people were criticizing him, even though he's a good person, whatever. I understand that part of it and why he goes to bat for guys like Ian Desmond, but it doesn't help anybody else saying something like that on radio.
I think, you know, and we've talked about this with Drew Goodman as well, the access thing and the fact that these guys are around these players when they're working. Like, Spilly sees how hard
the human side
works.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he sees everything about not just the work ethic, but probably the frustration and the fact that, you know, and we tried to have this conversation on Twitter a couple of weeks ago and got shouted down by people who are on the opposite side of this, that you can still feel bad for Ian Desmond as a frustrated athlete while simultaneously acknowledging that he's struggling on the field.
He's rich.
Like, that's,
he's
rich. Exactly. Like, that's a human thing as well.
He can't feel bad.
Can't feel bad for somebody who's gotten paid money to do a thing that he's struggling paying money at, or making money at, doing his job, whatever. So I understand Spilly's point of view as well, because Spilly does see every day Ian Desmond going in, busting his ass, trying to get better. And I don't doubt for a second that Ian Desmond is more frustrated than any human being on the planet with what's gone on this season. Pat Fulton
is
probably
content.
The same way. No, none of those guys. And I think that's certainly a fallacy that some people probably hold, is that Ian Desmond's just okay with cashing checks and going out and being bad at his job. Nobody hates this more than Ian Desmond.
He just goes home after an 0-for-4 and just like Scrooge McDuck just dives into his pool of gold coins, come on.
That to me, that drives me insane. And so I do get that from Spilly's point of view and from Drew Gribben's point of view and everybody
Rocky, like I get my hackles up with stuff like that because it does not help anybody else out. We know that Twitter is going to be the worst of the discourse. We know that already.
Yes,
but to say that they're disappointed in us and how the season's gone and why we're all frustrated, it's like, well, we're frustrated for a reason,
And I think
we're not making this up here.
And the fact that at Rockies doesn't just lash out and trash everybody on a regular basis is a miracle in and of itself. They're saints. They're absolute saints. And I would never be able to do that job because I would just end up cursing at everybody on Twitter. And so the fact that maybe this was like the one moment of somewhat frustration that kind of boiled over a little tiny bit for Rockies Twitter, for at Rockies, those people they really are. Like, they should be knighted with their patience. But I think even if you asked at Rockies and whoever sent that tweet, would you rather have it be this way where fans have expectations and are disappointed and are voicing those disappointments, or would you rather have it be 2013? Right. I'm pretty sure that the choice would be 2018 and expectations and frustration, because when you're 26 and 24 and you're in first place and you're coming off of what was an okay road trip, not a great road trip, but an okay road trip, like, the fact that this is even in the realm of possibility that we would be frustrated with a team that we just think should be better and should be running away with the National League West, like, that's pretty damn good given where they were when we started this podcast, for example.
Yes.
So I think, everything in sports is cyclical. Everything in society is cyclical. Eventually, they're going to get to a stage where things level out a little bit, and this is not a you just know this team is going to hit, but there will be better offensive stretches at some point, and we'll calm down on that stuff for a little while.
And I really hope that they just don't like start dunking on people like Drew Goodman tried to. Like, that's you can't do that. Like,
no,
it's,
and
it's
that,
not
like,
a look.
No, and because
I don't think
even,
they will. I'm saying like.
And, because at Rockies is so much better humored, but they, when Ian Desmond has done things,
they
trolled it out in humorous ways. But then that brings out all of the worst people who respond. After Desmond's home run against the Dodgers a couple of nights ago, they tweeted something out about it. And one guy's response was Hunt's fastball, gets fastball, doesn't miss fastball, with a video of Ian Desmond hitting the homer. And one guy responded and was like, doesn't miss fastballs. This guy's missed more fastballs than anyone on the team this year, blah, blah, blah. So it's like, on the one hand, you see the negativity and it's so frustrating. Like, the dude hit a home run, let him have a moment.
Or on the other hand, the dude jumped into the front row and made a great catch. Like,
he actually, yesterday defensively looked okay on a few different plays.
Yeah.
There was the slap tag on Puig as Puig went by on a throw that was off the bag. There was the play, like you said, in foul territory. He made a couple of really good stabs on, Stung line drive one hop grounders to first. He looked okay yesterday. And Ian Desmond is a hell of a good athlete. Like, we've talked about that time and time again. But also, you can't simultaneously troll and then get upset when people get upset with the trolling either.
Right.
That is, if there is a PDP thing that we have learned. So I don't know. I think I wish that we were in a society in which it was possible to have discourse. I wonder what it was like to grow up in an era where people could have conversations and just realize, we have different opinions and that's okay. And I'm not saying that I'm some saint in that regard, because obviously I have strong opinions on things, but I think we've gotten so lost in the weeds of you're either with the Rockies or you're with Ian Desmond. This whole stupid, it's okay to have differing thoughts on what can make this team better. And the reason why, and this ironically Golf Yeezy was the one that we initially had this conversation with on Twitter like 3 years ago before he turned into just the worst person on Twitter and we had to block him. And apparently he follows us from another account and still retweets us, which is hilarious. But that clown, whoever that anonymous moron is, like he was so fired up in the mentions a few years ago about something. And I turned it into like a positive, harping on the point that the reason why everybody is upset about certain things going wrong is because we're all pulling on the same end of the rope. Like we all want this team to be successful. That's the whole point of being sports fans. So to say like this is bad and these things should be done to correct it is not like subversion. It's not like us trash talking the organization. We all want the same thing that the organization wants. We just seem to think like, oh, when things aren't working well, maybe you make changes, which the organization has not felt as of yet. And I don't think that that should be something that's hung around people's necks as a medal of shame.
Yeah.
Which is kind of where we've gotten to. And I don't like that.
Yep. But it's the world we live in. Either you stand for the anthem or you should get out of the country.
Yeah, exactly. talk about creating your own problems.
Yeah.
I love how nobody remembers that prior to like 2009, football players didn't come on the field for the anthem.
And nobody cared.
And nobody cared.
Nobody cared.
And then the NFL started taking millions of dollars from the Department of Defense for paid displays of patriotism and making players go on the field for the anthem, created this issue for themselves. And now they're like, well, now you don't have to go on the field for the anthem. But
cool.
If you do, and you make yourself known, you're going to get fined. Like, just the dumbest. God, the NFL is so fucking insufferable.
The NFL is, it's making it really, really hard to give a shit about it anymore.
It is the worst, man.
Yeah.
And yeah, you look at those situations, and you think like, yeah, I'd rather complain about Ian Desmond for the next 100 years than be subjected to another goddamn conversation about the anthem.
That's why this is not a Broncos podcast.
Thank the Lord. So let's just look at some more overarching topics from the road trip. They go out, they go 4-5. There were a couple winnable games on that road trip that slip away from them. Maybe you go 6-3. That would have been a much better alternative to 4-5. But you go through San Diego, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. You go 4-5. You split a series at AT&T, SBC, Pac Bell Park. You're happy with that.
Yeah.
That's fine. Should they have probably gotten 2 out of 3 in Los Angeles? Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the Dodgers are a team that is struggling. They're not breathing down your necks right now. If you're going to lose a series at Dodger Stadium in May, and then maybe eventually you're going to win a series over the Dodgers in September, like, I'm fine with that.
Right.
I'm fine with a 4-5 road trip. Are they in first place on the merits of their good play? No,
nope.
They're in first place because the D-backs are a dumpster fire. But the fact of the matter is they're in first place, and they're coming home from a road trip in which they are 4-5, and they're 26-24 overall, and they're in first place. The bigger issue with this team is that they're 7-11 at home this season. If the Rockies were a team that was 11-7 at home this season, for example, then they'd be 30-20 right now. And that's a big difference for this team, I think, is the fact that they haven't been able to find a way consistently to win at home. The Rockies right now at 7-11 have one of the worst home winning percentages in the National League. And you look at the other teams that are leading their divisions, the Philadelphia Phillies are 18-7 at home. They're a half game back of the Braves. The Braves are 11-9, so whatever, but the Brewers are 13-9. The Pirates are 15-9. The Cardinals are 15-11. The Cubs are 13-10. Even the D-backs are 14-12, and the Giants are 14-10. So these teams are all at least making hay or staying above water at home. The Rockies haven't done that yet. So if we're going to look at that from the positive side, if they figure out how to start winning consistently at home, that's a really good sign.
Well, you know,
they played well on the road.
Yeah.
Start taking care of business at home.
Well, you know what's weird? They've only played 18 home games. They have more wins on the road than they have played games at home this year.
So weird.
They haven't really had a chance to get into any kind of groove at home because they really haven't had much of an opportunity to play there. And this is going to be a big road or a big homestand here. They got the Reds, the Giants, and the Dodgers in four,
is this the
nine
first
games.
Three series homestand?
This is the first three series homestand of the season.
Yeah. So the fact that the Rockies are a 26-24 team, if you would have gone to us 5 years ago and said the Rockies are going to have the worst hitting offense in the National League and they're going to play 32 of their first 50 games away from Coors Field, I honestly, like, if you would have told me that that team was 18-32, I would have believed you in a heartbeat. They're 26-24. They're 19-13 away from Coors Field. The Rockies have finished above 500 in franchise history on the road two times. Two times in franchise history have they posted above 500 records on the road.
What happened in those years?
They made the postseason.
Weird.
Right now, they're six games over 500. Is it going to stand that way? I don't know. Who the hell knows? They're going to play 81 games on the road. Yeah. Maybe they'll finish 41-40. Maybe
whatever.
They'll finish 30-51
shut up.
Away from home.
Shut up. Whatever.
Exactly,
you don't know.
You jerks. You
shut
don't
up.
Know. You don't know anything. Shut yeah. up, people. But I, like, it's fine. Like, where they are right now is fine.
Yes. It they is were, still May 24th.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, they're in first place right now. They're a half game up on the D-backs. They're sure there are issues with this team, but if we're complaining about a first place team on May 24th, I think that's a good thing because that means the barometer and the standards and the bars by which everything is measured have been changed drastically.
Good.
Because this time 4 years ago, if we were in a conversation with 2018 Tyler and Anthony and you would have told 2014 Tyler and Anthony, hey, they're going to be in first place at the end of May and you're going to be bitching about it, we would have been like, wait, what?
Why? Like, no, we're not.
For what possible reason would we be complaining about this?
You don't know
and
us.
Then you'd say, they signed Ian Desmond for $70 million to play first base. And you'd be like, what? Dogs are walking people and peanut butter and jelly are on the outside of sandwiches. What? So, like, just keep it in perspective. They're a first place team right now.
Yeah.
Things are okay. All is fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen.
Maybe not all is fine.
It's not like there aren't issues, clearly. Yeah. I mean, you look over this 14 game stretch where when the team is 5-9, three of the top six batting averages in that time are from pitchers. Tyler Anderson, Chad Bettis, and Herman Marquez are all hitting.
Chad Bettis, who had six hits in his professional career
all into
this year.
250 or better in the last 14 games. Nolan in that time is hitting 321, though he has not homered in a long time. But, I mean, if you're an opposing pitcher, why would you ever throw Nolan Arenado anything at this point with the production he has in that lineup? But and to his credit, he's taking a lot of walks. Like in that 14 game stretch, no one's hitting 321 with a 400 OBP. That's super. Para in that time is hitting 304 with a couple of bombs. Good for him. Story is driven in 12 in that time, three homers, hitting 278. Wonderful. Don't look past that. Everybody else is worse than that.
Yeah.
I mean, in that time, Daniel Castro's 3-26. That's a nice 115. Tony Walters, 2-21. That's an 095. Chris Iannetta, 5-29. That's a 172. Ian Desmond, 9-50. That's a 180. Even David Dahl, hitting 206 in that time. Pat Valaika, 3-14.
Oh, boy.
The one guy I'm worried about is Charlie Blackmon a little bit. Charlie's had a rough month of May, and I'm wondering if some of those nagging injuries that he had in April, the quad, the back, maybe starting to rear their heads here in May. Like, maybe he should have gone taking 10 days off. I mean, in April, he hit six home runs. He was in 282 with nearly 900 OPS. In May, that's a 240 average, a 767 OPS, three home runs. He has taken his walks, 15 walks, 16 strikeouts this month. That's fantastic. But he's hit one home run since May 5th. And he's not hitting for a lot of power, just two or three extra base hits in that time. You know, he's still getting his hits. He got an infield hit last night, legging stuff out, but he's only in 263 on the year. A lot of his power came early. So I'm wondering if you don't have your legs with you, if your quads hurt, knees are hurt, whatever. Because remember, when he got hurt, he sat out a few games in April. Even when he came back, he was still very gingerly running the bases and taking routes in the outfield. You know, I'm wondering if he's really at 100%.
Yeah, I think
if they don't have Chuck hitting the way that he should be hitting, the way he has hit the last 3-4 years, then it is just Nolan, and opposing pitchers have no reason to throw Nolan anything at all because they don't think anybody else in that lineup is going to hurt them, and they're probably right.
Yeah, the concept of lineup protection, quote unquote, is overblown, as has been proven kind of statistically. However, the concept of lineup dynamism and the way a lineup is constructed around multiple difficult bats to get out, that's not an illusion. And so just suggesting, like, oh, well, if you put somebody behind Nolan, Nolan's going to see better pitches, that might not necessarily be true. But if you do have another threat in the lineup, it changes the entire dynamic of how you pitch to a lineup. And the Rockies right now just don't have that.
Yeah.
That's where the frustration comes in, because you get to a situation where it's first and third and one out, and you have 5, 6, 7 coming up for the Rockies. And really, once you pass Nolan in the lineup, with the exception of Trevor Story, depending on where he's hitting on a given night, because he's really turned things on over the last month or so, you really have zero faith that anything is going to happen.
No, you really don't. Yeah. You know,
I mean, the Rockies' run totals on this road trip, 6-4 win to open the trip against the Padres, then shut out by the Padres. Jordan Lyles nearly perfectoed them on Tuesday, the 15th. Then a 5-3 win over the Giants and a 6-1 win over the Giants, all well and good. 9-4 loss to the Giants, 9-5 loss to the Giants. And then on the road in Los Angeles, 2 runs, 3 runs, 0 runs.
Well, the last 10 days, the Rockies have been no-hit through 4 innings 4 times.
Oh,
I mean,
one of those being
that
Jordan Lyles.
That is all you have to say. They have been no-hit through four times in 10 days.
Not great, Bob.
And by the way, runner on third, less than 2 outs. Rockies are the third worst team in baseball getting that runner home this year. They get the runner home 46% of the time. Only the Reds and D-backs are worse.
That's the good stuff. That's good. It's good.
It's not good.
It's not good. Is what I'm suggesting.
It's not.
So I don't know. I don't know what the solution is. What I do
try
know
something
is
different. That there are guys in the big leagues that don't need to be in the big leagues right now.
Yeah. What I do know is there needs to be a solution. I think that's where this all really kind of boils down. I don't know what the solution is. I am not smart enough to make the solution happen. But there needs to be a solution. And the fact that this has gone on at a rate where you really feel like, man, if this was going to be this bad, you'd figure by the third week of this struggling offense, there would be some sort of substantial move. This offense has been pretty bad for like 6 straight weeks, and there hasn't been anything done. That's what's frustrating everybody.
Yeah. But so, hey, ask PDP coming up.
But hey, ask PDP. Your Colorado Rockies return home to take on the Cincinnati Reds, who are not a good baseball team. And hopefully that is something positive for the Rockies, who will send John Gray to the mound coming up on Friday. The Reds in town for 3, then the San Francisco Giants in town for 3. Then they get an off day at home, which is always nice. And then the Los Angeles Dodgers come to town. And then they go on the road to Cincinnati and come home to take on the D-backs. So they play 12 of the next 15 at home against opponents that you should be beating. The Reds are a bad team. The Giants are not a very good team. The Dodgers have not played like a good team. Then you go on the road to take on the Reds, who are not good again, and the D-backs, who have been a complete train wreck over the last 3 weeks. And, you know, maybe they'll have it turned around by June 8th to the 10th. Who knows? But the fact is there are winnable games coming up, and they get 12 of the next 15 at home, and that's big.
Time to get hot.
Keep yourselves a little bit on the positive side. You're frustrated, and we're all frustrated because we all have expectations. We want this team to be good, and that's fine. Don't lose that. Don't lose that fire. Maybe channel it in a way that isn't, well, this guy sucks and he's a terrible person, because as we stated, that's dumb. But, you know, like they're in first place. You want them to be better. We want them to be better. And, you know, wants them to be better more than anybody, the people in the front office. So maybe they're not doing exactly what we all want, but presumably there is a conversation and a thought of how to get things fixed. And you know, we'll stake things on that for now. Ask PDP coming up next. Well, you guys did not disappoint as normal with PDP questions. Ask PDP. I shouldn't say as normal. That suggests as normal. You normally disappoint us. That's not what I meant. That's not what I meant.
Yeah.
So calm down.
Yeah, nice PDP. Job.
Let's dive into hashtag Ask PDP, and we're gonna get started with a terrific one from longtime PDP listener Will, who submitted this one. Quote, if there was an updated version of the Simpsons episode Homer at the Bat, which current Rockies players would be on it, and what misfortunes would befall each of them that keeps them out of the softball championship game? And then he followed up and said, also, before anyone else says it, Desmond's bat has already disappeared into the mystery spot.
This could be one of the best Ask PDP's questions we've ever received.
This is a good
one. Honestly, because I wasn't going to look at these yet. I like to be surprised with these some of the time, but like I saw that one come in about 45 minutes before we actually started recording, and I sat up in bed and I was like, I must think about this.
I'm assuming so, for those, because let's face it,
we would
actually
know,
be a substantial amount of people tuned into this show who may not have even been born when Homer the Bat aired, which
don't
makes
say that
blow my
don't
head off
that.
Homer the Bat initially aired on February 20th, 1992. So you could be 25 years old and have never seen, you could be 26 years old and have not been alive when Homer the Bat aired. But anyway, Simpsons episode, Mr. Burns recruits a team of major leaguers to play in a company softball game, a league. Well, no, through the league, Homer is the star of the team and he leads the team to the championship game. And then for the championship game, Mr. Burns goes out and signs like Roger Clemens and Ken Griffey Jr. and Jose Canseco and Daryl Strawberry and Wade Boggs and Don Mattingly and all these people. And all of these various injuries and ailments befall members of that team and then lead Homer to be the guy, of course, who steps into the big moment. And for the thrilling conclusion, you'll have to dig it up on the FXX app and watch it.
As you should. If you don't know what it is, watch it.
You really should.
People.
Like,
come
the
on.
Cultural impact of that episode is fantastic. And there was a great story written several years ago by... Was that a Deadspin story?
I believe it was,
yeah. Yeah, it was. That did the making of Homer at the Bat. It was one of the Simpsons' first episodes. Yeah. Eric Malinowski wrote it.
That's right.
And it was one of the very first episodes that won its time slot, I think, in the primetime ratings, which, awkward to say this now, but it beat The Cosby Show. So it's fantastic. It's a fabulous episode. Jose Canseco is as terrible of a voice actor as you would imagine him to be, but it's great. The whole thing is great. So I'm assuming Will's question means like there are a bunch of players from a bunch of different teams, and which Rockies would be on this team and what would happen to them.
Oh, see, I thought it was gonna be like in the
or did you think
overall in baseball, like what players right now would the Simpsons
right,
take if
right.
they had Homer at the bat too,
right,
and
yeah.
what would befall them?
I think that's what it is.
Okay, so like I'm gonna
which
go
current Rockies players would be on it would be that's Will's question.
Well, and to be fair, it was a pretty standard like stars. I mean, Jose Canseco was a star then. Daryl Strawberry,
yeah,
like Roger
absolutely.
Clemens, Ozzie Smith, like
Ken
so.
Griffey Jr. He was the biggest name in the game, or
with
getting
his,
ready to be
with his gigantism. Yeah.
By the way, so, the Rockies as a franchise were not around when that episode aired. That just kind of hit me too.
Yeah. Wow.
But anyway.
So like you gotta imagine Nolan would be there. Someone like that. Someone they could who would be a bad voice actor probably. But a recognizable name and a great player.
No, I will say he was pretty good this week in the video where he was apologizing to the bucket of
to the Haichu.
To the Haichu. He was good with
which,
that.
Which, by the way, Haichu, I feel bad for Nolan because Haichu was literally like the most underrated candy of all time. It is so Haichu much better than Starburst.
Like,
oh, my God.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's Starburst-like, right?
If I open one Haichu, I'm eating 20. Like, I love those things.
Okay,
anyway. So no one have to be there, obviously. Chuck could be there. Like, I could see Chuck.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm trying to think where he would fall in the Simpsons universe, you know.
My thing with Chuck would be he would get stuck. And this happens to a Simpsons character in – God, I wish I could remember what list or what episode this was where it's a – like one of those old-timey – dishwasher like clothes washing things and Jasper gets his beard stuck in it.
Yeah,
and then right. as he tries to crank it to get his beard out, his beard gets sucked more and more into the old clothes wringer. I think that would be Chuck's thing. Chuck would be stuck in like an 1880s laundromat and never able to return.
Or he's gonna be at the steel mill where it turns into a gay club after dark. We work hard, we play hard.
The disco ball that just drops
exactly.
down.
I can see those, that's the easy answer, and obviously I could see that happening. I'm sure like all of baseball, like I want position by position, like, you know, you're going with stars here, like someone like Noah Syndergaard be the pitcher, but
yeah.
You know, he is on the Mets and the Mets trainer is actually Dr. Nick Riviera, so
yeah.
You know, he's going to be fall
like a real
some
life
kind
thing.
Of illness at that point. I could see Buster Posey being a part of this, but like
I feel like he would be the bad Canseco voice actor.
Yeah,
like Buster Posey would have just like, zero personality.
He would like get like steamed hams poisoning, like something dumb like
that's
that.
That's an Albany expression.
Yeah, like all right, Joey Votto, you know, in the
yeah.
Wade Boggs part in that. He gets knocked out by Barney in a bar for arguing
yep.
who's the better leader of England.
Yep.
I could see Joey Votto doing that about Pierre Justin Trudeau.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Being he is really Canada's ambassador to the United States anyway,
yeah,
Joey Votto.
Yeah.
Did you see the video of him the other day, by the way, pretending to flip down the flip-up and flip-down sunglasses that he was not wearing? And he pretends to flip them down, then makes the catch, and then fake flips them back up. God, I love Joey Votto so
much. Joey Votto, anyway, is, like, he's a living troll because he knows
and he's getting more and more cantankerous as his career goes on.
Well, because he's playing
so
with the Reds, man. Like, like, it's awesome.
It's amazing.
I could see Ozzy Albies like starring in a soap opera with Bumblebee Man.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah. Like Mookie Betts, like he's a good bowler. You know, he could like bowl a 300 and then instead of like the balloon coming down for a 300 game, like the bowling ball comes down instead and like, you know, knocks him unconscious.
True. That's good.
So in this one I was thinking too, like, you know, you got your Bryce Harper, you got your Mike Trout. You know, Bryce Harper, it could be the easy one. It could be McBain. You know, everyone knows McBain.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a good one. And Mike Trout's a superhero. He might be better than Bryce Harper. It could be better than anybody in baseball. But Mike Trout loves being a sidekick. So Mike Trout could be the new Fallout Boy.
Ooh. Oh,
Bryce Harper is McBain,
too.
And Mike Trout is Fallout Boy.
I also kind of feel like Bryce Harper would be the one to get the Mattingly Shave Those Sideburns treatment. But it would be more about just his long flowing locks.
Yes.
Although he actually has long flowing locks and Mattingly did not have sideburns in the episode. But yeah, those are good. Those are all good.
Yeah. So like, I don't know. Like I was thinking about that. Like, I was really excited about that.
It's a hell of a good question, Will.
That's a hell of a good question. Nice job, Will.
That kicks us off on Ask PD.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. What do we got the next one? Oh, by the way, we should point out Nicky Paume, one of our friends from across the pond in Austria. He is going to be taking a huge excursion.
So awesome.
To Coors Field from Austria. He said he's traveling literally 5,280 miles from Innsbruck.
How cool is that? From Innsbruck.
To come see the Rockies. And he's always talking to us. He's always watching the Rockies. It's a big time difference, of course. But he posted pictures of, I have to imagine, his beautiful daughters saying Austria loves the Rockies. Innsbruck, 5,280 miles to Denver. Like, they're super excited and super adorable. And they're going to be coming to Denver soon. So they leave on June 9th. Cannot wait. If we can see Nikki when they come in, it will be awesome. So cannot wait
so
for
much
that.
Fun.
That is fantastic.
So much fun.
Yeah.
That's cooler beyond words than all of our fans. All suck outside of. If you're not traveling internationally to see the Rockies and meet the PDP, you're not our favorites. Sorry.
Exactly. So this is a great question from Eric Garcia McKinley at Garcia_McKinley. This one's for people who live in the central and eastern time zones who have day jobs. When the Rockies play on the West Coast, what game situations make it okay to just go to bed, say, screw it, I'll just be a mess in the morning if I stay up, situations?
My thought process here is the rule of three. If it is a three-run game or closer, you got to stay up. Unless...
That's a good call.
It's like recent weeks and you know they're not going to score three runs. But what to me is kind of like the dividing line, because I am currently on the East Coast. I work nights, so I don't have this problem. But when I used to have somewhat more normal hours, this was always a struggle for me too whenever I traveled out east. I think it's kind of the close and late qualifier, which there's the stats about games close and late.
Yeah.
That's sort of what it is for things like this. If, for example, it is a three-run game in the seventh inning, the Rockies haven't done much offensively, and whoever they're playing scores another run or two, by all means,
I'm out. Yeah.
Even if it's like the sixth, if it's the fifth, whatever it is. If it's like a five-run game and you can tell the game is just offensively not trending toward them, I don't have any problem with you going to bed. Also, likewise... And I'm going to throw this out there. I think if the Rockies are up big, you're not under any obligation to stick it out. If they're leading by like eight, you know, go to bed and they ended up losing that game.
Right.
Look at all of the rage that you avoided by not watching.
You're not going to want to see that in the morning.
Yeah.
If they're up big, absolutely go to bed.
Exactly.
If you need to
go to
bed. Because it can only be bad from that point on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's
only going to make
you
angry.
You're under an obligation to make it an official game. I think you have to watch through the fifth. But then you just make your judgment call from there. If it's three runs or closer, I say stick it out. If it's more than that, then, you know, then listen to your heart. If it's more than that and they're losing, go to bed. Yes. If it's more than that and they're winning, you know, those are enjoyable games. So keep stay tuned in if you want. Yep. Or just fall asleep with the TV on, which, as we all know, is like really unhealthy to do.
Yep.
Because the blue light penetrates your brain and then turns you into a person who trolls people on Twitter. From our good buddy Matt Hansen, if the Rockies eventually have to DFA Carlos Gonzalez, how long will you set aside for curling up into a ball and weeping?
I don't want to. I don't want to think about that, man. But it's
so sad.
It's getting close, man. It's he does not look good. He's nothing is on time right now. It looks like he's guessing a lot at the plate.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
I really would like to I wish that the Rockies were a franchise that had more media interest, because if this was a circumstance where Cargo was doing this, had Cargo played his entire career for the Mets or the Cardinals or the Cubs or somebody, I think you'd get one of those stories where they track down, you know, for example, like one of the hitting guys on Twitter or something like that to do a thorough evaluation of what exactly Cargo's issues are right now.
Yeah.
Because I'm not smart enough to be able to watch Cargo swing and think anything other than, well, it doesn't look like he's catching up to fastballs, or you can tell that he's not really sequencing himself right at the plate or whatever it is. Like,
they're busting him inside a lot, and he is just getting sawed off every at bat.
But yeah. I'm not smart enough to look at it and think like, oh, well, his swing path is a little bit different, or the way his hands are positioned, or this part of his leg kick. Like, I wish that I could sit down with somebody who knows all that stuff and go through it piece by piece. But Cargo's numbers, just the precipitous drop off since 2016. Cargo was an all-star in 2016. He played in 150 games, batted .298, .350, .505, hit 25 homers and drove in 100 runs. And since then, he has been a ghost. It's 170 games since then. He's just been a bad, bad offensive player.
Yeah, it's hard to watch.
It sucks.
Yeah.
Oh, it sucks so bad, and I hate it so much.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most beautiful swings we've ever seen come through Coors Field. And
I really do wonder, we talked about this.
We've not seen that swing this year.
No. I wonder how much of it has to do with the injuries from early on in his career. I wonder if he's just a guy who, he's 32 years old. He's not an old player by any stretch. He won't be 33 until October, but Cargo took a lot of beatings early on in his career, and he gutted out. I mean, you think about Cargo early on, and you kind of thought to yourself, like, well, guy was hurt all the time. He played 145 games in 2010, 127 in 2011, 135 in 2012, and then only 180 combined over the next couple of seasons. But then he rebounded for 150 plus in 2015 and 2016, and 136 games last year. Like, Cargo's got a lot of miles on that body, and you kind of wonder if that factors into it. It very much depresses me. We had one other Cargo question, which we actually have an answer to. Which came to us from Ryan Tarletsky, one that is directly Cargo related and one that is directly Cargo specific and one that is Cargo related that we'll get to as well. But Ryan says, why, when you Google Carlos Gonzalez, is there a picture of him in an Orioles hat? And we actually have the answer to this. Not only is it a picture of Cargo in an Orioles hat, it is the very first picture that comes up in that little box to the right on Google. When you Google him, the first picture that comes up is Cargo in an Orioles hat. But apparently it was from a sporting news story from a couple of years ago about MLB trade rumors and like where players could best fit, and they photoshopped him into an Orioles hat. But for some reason, that's the first
picture
that comes up.
It's so weird. Yeah.
And then if you click like on the Google images page later, there is a picture of him in an Angels hat. So it was like a whole bunch of different scenarios of where Cargo could go. But that's the reason why. But his Ryan's related question, and this is one that actually like gave me pause, because I think it's a really good question. Try to ignore recency bias, but at the end of it all, is Charlie Blackmon going to be a better all-time Rocky than Cargo? Which I think even like a year or 2 years ago, I would have thought was somewhat laughable. Now I'm not so sure.
It's not crazy to think.
Yeah.
Like, how do you define all-time Rocky? I mean, is it home runs? Is it hits? Is it, you know, whatever? Like, I don't know. Like, it's like, if you think Charlie can have a longer career than Cargo in that regard, you could. But, you know, Chuck started his career late, and he started the good part of his career even later. You know, that's the thing with Cargo. He was a phenom. So he came up to the big leagues at an
Chuck
early
age.
Chuck
wasn't an everyday player until he was 27.
Chuck went to college, you know, so he's already behind the eight ball there.
Was
came
a
up and was
year, a 4 year player in college.
And wasn't even really a big time prospect with the Rockies necessarily. Really turned his career around when he was 27, like you said. So you look at it right now, just look at total bases. Cargo's third in Rockies history in, let's see, a little under 4,700 plate appearances. Chuck has a little under 3,400, so about 1,300 more plate appearances. Cargo's third in total bases. Chuck is ninth. Chuck is just behind Andrés Galarraga. So I'm just kind of looking to see like some other ways we could define it. Chuck obviously just signed the contract, so he's going to be here for at least a few more years. I don't know, man. I don't know. He definitely could.
I don't either.
And I would not be shocked, but you know, you forget how good Cargo was.
Yeah,
you know?
I think that's the thing. Cargo, you're glimpsing him right now in what appears to be the twilight of his career, and it makes it feel like the prime was so long ago. It was 2 years ago he was an all-star. Two years ago he was OPSing 855 and hitting 25 homers. And the year before that was a 40-homer season for Cargo. It was a career-best season in 2015. He played in 153 games, 271, 325, 540, with 40 home runs. By the way, he somehow hit 15 more homers than the following year, but drove in three fewer runs. Which,
so
whatever.
Yeah. It's going
it's
to be
just like the fall off is what's sticking with you right now, and that's the bummer.
Like if Chuck can age better than Cargo, then
I think that's what it comes down to.
But it's about aging better. So.
Yeah. And what else is crazy, too, is like you think about Cargo and you think like, well, Chuck, he's still relatively new to the scene. I mean, Cargo's been around forever. Cargo's been a Rocky for 10 years.
Yeah.
Chuck has been in the major leagues for parts of eight seasons. Now, granted, the first three of those seasons, the most games he played was 82 games in a year. But still, like, Chuck's been around since 2011.
Yeah.
Just kind of crazy to think about. It's really only 5 years of regular playing time for Chuck, and I think that ultimately is what's going to keep Cargo as the better all-time player, is the fact that Chuck wasn't an everyday player until he was 27, and Cargo was when he was 23, 24.
Yeah.
But, you know, Chuck plays a more valuable defensive position. Does he play center field as well as Cargo played his corner outfield spots? No, I don't
probably
think
not.
So.
Yeah.
But there's more value in being a center fielder. There's also a little bit more value in being a middle of the lineup guy rather than being a leadoff guy. But it's a really interesting argument.
To be fair, Chuck hit like a middle of the order guy last year.
Chuck hits like a middle of the order guy, despite the fact that he's consistently slotted in the top two spots. But I think 2 years ago, this conversation would not have really been possible, especially because 2 years ago, Cargo was still Cargo. But now, that is a really, really interesting question. It's a really good question from Ryan.
All right. From a webhead at Technus_Spade, when was the last time the Rockies won on national TV, not counting the MLB Network day games? As far as I can remember, whenever the Rockies play on ESPN, we lose, which happened on Tuesday. The Rockies played ESPN against the Dodgers, lost that game. I'm going to say the last time they won on national TV was the 2007 NLCS.
I mean, they won a couple games in the NLCS
and that was on cable. You know, it was on TBS.
That's true. Those were TBS broadcasts back in the day.
So
yeah,
I think it's been a minute. Yeah, been a minute.
Yeah, not great. I don't know why that is. I don't know why they always seem to play so poorly on national TV.
Yeah, it's stupid. And that's why everyone doesn't care about the Rockies on national TV.
They played 3 1-run games in that 2009 NLDS. They lost the first game 5-4, then they or 5-1, then they won game 2 5-4, lost game 3 6-5, and lost game 4 5-4.
Houston!
Losing pitcher in both of those games, Houston Street. The
Remember,
most
like,
annoying
a couple of years ago
there?
When was someone asked a question like, who's your most hated Rocky? And we both were like, Houston Street. And everyone yelled at us?
Yeah, remember that?
Everyone like screamed
like,
at us.
Street
like,
was
how
good.
Would you hate
except
Houston
for when
Street.
It mattered.
It's so good. Yeah.
Plus, he's a former Texas Longhorn, so I already can't stand him. And he's, like, the most annoying dude on Twitter.
Like, no, everyone yelled at us for hating Houston Street. We're like, yeah, no, Houston Street, screw that guy. Like,
yeah, no, I'm not going back on that. I'm
not going back on that either. All right, from Kyle Herndon, the Twitter handle is at kherndon_34. Would you rather, one, the Rockies have something that resembles an MLB-level offense, or two, get to hang out with David Dahl's puppy every day for the rest of the summer?
I'm going to put this way to you, and this is not a joke. I had a dream last night that I met David Dahl's puppy.
Get out of here.
So obviously I would say B. Apparently.
We both follow that puppy on Instagram.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's if you are not following David Dahl's puppy on Instagram, you are doing everything about social media wrong.
Yeah.
He's like, he brings such a little ray of sunshine. Rookie Golden, by the way, is his Instagram handle. And Rookie, even though he is, this was the post from today.
He travels so much. He's going to get too big to fly on planes soon, you know?
I was having this conversation with at the Susie Hunter. Rookie is, I think David Dahl's like maybe a little bit of an absentee dog father. Sure. And not David Dahl's fault. He travels a lot. He plays a major league schedule. It's fine. Yeah. But it's kind of funny that we refer to him as David Dahl's dog because it's really David Dahl's fiance, Jacqueline Davis. Rookie is Jacqueline's dog, and Jacqueline's taking Rookie all over the place. He flies nonstop. He's the cutest little pup on planes. He's adorable.
She works for a marketing firm.
She's an agent of some kind with, I think, primarily NFL players, but her life seems very cool.
The new Broncos first-round pick, Bradley Chubb, is one of her
Bradley
clients.
Chubb is a client. But she's, you know, flying to Vegas and taking pictures of Rookie, hanging out with Danny Amendola at photo shoots and like just whatever. Like Rookie's life is the coolest thing ever. But I think we should start calling it Jacqueline Davis's dog, because David Dahl, though he obviously loves Rookie, you know, he's got his own things going on right now. Over the off season, it'll be more David Dahl's dog. Right. I think David is kind of stuck right now, not like, getting to fully experience Rookie.
How does he get his own seat on the plane? I don't get that.
That's what I want to know. Does she buy Rookie a seat?
She has to.
Rookie, I think it was yesterday. Today she posted a picture of Rookie laying in this bag on top of her suitcase, and the caption is "Where to next?" And he's staring at the camera, and he's the cutest damn thing ever. But she, yesterday, 2 days ago, posted a picture of Rookie just passed out in the middle seat on a plane next to a lady passed out in the aisle, and then the guy across the aisle also passed out. And she said, the caption is, my new friends and I really bonded on this long flight, New York to Los Angeles, or Los Angeles to New York. But yeah, he's always like in his own seat. The thing that I loved about the picture today, where he's in the bag and has like the cutest little look on his face, is somebody commented and said, what is mom gonna do when you get too big for that bag? And the Rookie account responded, I'm already too big for it, but I just love it so much I whine when she takes me out.
He is way too big for that bag.
He's the cutest little little golden retriever. He's awesome.
So anyway, Kyle, to answer your question, definitely David Dahl's puppy.
Yeah, definitely David Dahl's puppy. And I really hope that I actually get to meet him the next time he's at Coors Field. Like, I think to myself, eventually, I'm going to run across this dog, and I'm going to have to go up to Jacqueline Davis and say, I know how insane this is going to sound.
I know everything about your dog.
But is this Rookie? Because I have followed this dog since he was like 3 weeks old on Instagram. Oh, he's the best.
So a few more.
Another one from our buddy Matt Hansen. What are your thoughts on having second teams in baseball or other sports asking for an ex-friend? And well, I think we all know to whom this is directed.
Yeah, like,
and
I
let's spoonerize his name so we don't out him as being who he is.
Yeah.
To spoonerize his name is Rio Radford. We'll just put it out there like that. And Rio is was pictured on social media wearing a hat of the Arizona Diamondbacks, which was given to him by his girlfriend. He looked to you for backup. You just savagely owned him on Twitter.
And I would do it again.
And Rio is like dead to most of us now, I think.
But since he wore the hat, the D-backs have not won. So
that's true. That is true. Maybe Rio was just playing us this whole time.
So
maybe
Rio
knew.
Listen, my wife is a D-backs fan. She's from Arizona. And a rat like that. My wife, she's a D-backs fan. And there is not a single way that I would ever be caught dead wearing Arizona Diamondbacks gear, especially on social media. Now, and she knows that. She's not trying to do that. Some of the biggest fights we ever have are me calling them the D-bags, because I do that a lot, because it's just too easy. She corrects me, and I go, nope. And then, you know, we start throwing things. I'm kidding. No, so like she knows that I am not going to be a D-backs fan, and she's not going to be a Rockies fan. She likes when the Rockies win because then I'm in a better mood, and you know, vice versa. But there's no way that would happen. And I told Rio that. Like, listen, he's like, oh well, she thought it would be funny because his girlfriend's apparently a D-backs fan. Like, oh, I thought it'd be funny, and
that
he's just there
make it okay.
Eating a Chipotle burrito, and I'd be like, that's not okay. Like I. Like, I wouldn't be caught dead wearing D-back stuff, especially online. Like, I will eat a full onion raw on social media before I wear a D-backs hat.
You pretty much do in your tacos.
Yeah, because they're good.
If there's one thing we've learned about Rocky's Twitter, if you post a picture of
don't ever have anything personal about yourself or food you're eating or give a food opinion or anything.
If you post a picture of yourself on Rocky's Twitter, you are going to get dragged the way you've never been dragged in your life. Just destroyed. And you know what? I'm fine with it. Here are my actual rules for second teams. You're allowed to have a second team in baseball if it's in the opposite league.
I do.
And you have to pick your priority team. So if they meet up in the World Series, you're not allowed to cheer for them both. You have to pick one. You have to be anti the other. So, like, for example, my freshman year of college, I went to Washington State University, and we have since embraced Mariners Twitter as being AL Rockies Twitter. I've always had a soft spot for the Mariners.
Sure.
I also have a soft spot for the Texas Rangers, because I used to work for them. So, like, there are a couple of teams that I follow with some interest in the American League. But, like, if the Rockies met those teams in the World Series, it's not like there's a conversation of who I'm going to be cheering for. No. And it's not like I'm even going to be a little bit pleased if the other team wins. So you can have a second team, but it has to be like an actual second team. It has to be like the team you're following when your team is on an off day.
So I don't know.
And
for
it can't
me,
be in the same division, and it sure as hell can't be the D-backs, Rio.
Right, come on. Like, for me, like, I'm a Cleveland Indians fan. My mom's from Cleveland.
Right.
I grew up, all my first experiences with professional baseball were with the Indians, whether it being going to games at Municipal Stadium, the Mistake by the Lake, or the Sky Sox at that time were an Indians affiliate. So you got to see, you know, Tomei and Baerga and Lofton and Joey Bell coming through Colorado Springs. So we got to go see those guys play. So then the Rockies came in when I was 7 years old, and I became a Rockies fan too. And really, there's not a lot of overlap there. Closest we came was 07. Indians were up 3-1 against the Red Sox in the ALCS, and the Rockies had already won, swept the D-backs in that series. Would have been an Indians-Rockies World Series. Everyone always asked me, what would you do? And I feel I split allegiances pretty well. Like, and so what would you have done? I said I would have gotten blackout drunk for every single game and not cared what happened. Because Cleveland, this is way before the Cavs even won. Indians have not won a World Series since 1948. Cleveland needs championships. I mean, of course, the Rockies. I would have loved if the Rockies would have won that. I would have loved if the Indians would have won that. I literally would not have been upset with either part of it. And this was 2007, obviously. If it happened again today, I'd still probably do the exact same thing. Like, I very much split allegiances when it comes to those two teams. I love them both very, very dearly.
Pick a side, man. This is America 2018.
Fine.
I don't have any room for this.
I'm a Marlins fan.
I don't have any room for this live this line straddling. Well, and you've got two more World Series than the rest of us do.
Ah, damn it.
That's a bummer. this is one that I think actually has somewhat of an answer, and it comes to us from at Yodo Pagoda, who has changed his name to Golf Yeezy on Twitter, and it throws me off every single time.
I always get confused for a second. I'm like, hey, what the?
Okay. Who is the best person to blame for the Rockies' struggles? I mean, rationally. Irrationally, I don't care. I just need a good person to blame for it. I think at some point, doesn't Dwayne Espy's job have to be a conversation? You are a major league hitting coach. That is the coach of the offense that plays in the most hitter-friendly environment in the history of the sport, and this is the worst offense in the National League. At some point, isn't that a conversation that should be had? And the Rockies, like, for being – that should be the easiest job on the planet, being the hitting coach at Coors Field. But the Rockies go through hitting coaches like the way the Broncos have gone through defensive coordinators in franchise history. Like, it's every other year there's a new hitting coach. It's Dante Bichette. It's Don Baylor. It's Dwayne Espy. It's that dude whose name I already forgot who they hired who was running a high school hitting academy, Blake Doyle. Well, and him too. Like, at some point, shouldn't there be a conversation about Dwayne Espy and what the hell it is he's actually doing?
Yes.
I don't understand at all. Like, that doesn't seem to have popped into the conversation anywhere. And especially because there are things that seem to be mechanically correctable. Like, Ian Desmond's swing struggles seem to be something that a good hitting coach would look at and go, all right, let's try this.
Yeah.
And I have not seen a change in approach once.
Cargo, same, you know, like,
Cargo, same way.
It's
I've also
he's
heard
beat inside every time.
I'm not 100% positive on the specifics of this story, but I know there was a time when Dwayne Espy was a coach in the Rockies minor league ranks and was somebody who was relatively disliked and kind of pushed into different roles because players did not like him at the minor league level. For a guy like that to then be promoted to role after role after role, I know the Rockies are a very loyal franchise, but if you get to the major league level and you're not being successful, like, what more do you have to do to not be in that job?
Well, yeah,
I'm not calling for the dude's job, but I don't know why nobody's talking about it.
We know the Rockies and how they deal with firings and the coaching staff and whatever. Yeah. You have to basically shove them out the door. Like they basically can just die in the position and nobody would care. Yeah, and that would pretty much be what the Monforts would probably prefer.
Pretty much. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's a weird one. Let's go a couple more.
Yeah. All right. From Ben Taylor at Ben_Taylor1044. 200 years from now, when there is an expansion team that plays home games literally on the moon, will the Coors Field narrative still exist? Great question.
Yeah, I bet it will. I bet it will. Because somehow the Moon Park will play more even-handed than Coors Field.
Yes.
Like that'll be the most Rockies thing ever, is that the Moon Park will end up just being like a very neutral playing field because
they're gonna
of
have
something
to
they
put,
do with the pressurization.
Pump in oxygen, you know.
Exactly.
Like, keep,
that's
so
the thing.
It'll be like a humidor again up there, you know. So it'll just be an oxygen tank. That's probably what they'll call it. Like they call Pepsi Center the can, they'll call it the oxygen tank.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good one.
Yeah.
I like that.
So, I have to imagine. It's
so the narrative will still be there. Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, it's Coors Field. They're never, it's never going to go away. Yeah. Everything about being a Rockies fan is just about being persecuted by the narrative.
Yeah.
Always. One of our favorites, Ryan Bloom at Bloomer Deluxe. How much would you contribute to this campaign? It is a Kickstarter campaign, and I actually meant to Google this and see if this is true. Let's see if this is actually real. I mean, obviously the numbers on it are fake. But I don't know if this is like something that somebody actually started or if this is just a Photoshop. Okay, thank God. I think it's just a Photoshop thing. But Ryan tweeted at us a Kickstarter campaign created by Concerned Rockies Fans. That's the title. Buy out the remainder of Ian Desmond's contract. And it says $36 million pledged of a $44 million goal from 42,198 backers. I'm actually kind of surprised that there's not, I bet there's like a change.org petition about it. I wouldn't contribute anything. I'm not spending any more of my damn money.
Listen, that's the thing.
It's not my money they're paying
with these contracts. It's not my money. Exactly.
Exactly.
It's not my
care.
Like,
and then Ryan,
at some point,
to be fair,
I don't care. Yeah.
No, exactly. Ryan then responded to that tweet and said, serious question, though. Is there any other industry as beholden to the sunk cost fallacy as professional baseball?
No, because it's guaranteed contracts. I mean, that's
right.
That's where it comes down to. I mean, when you sign somebody for that, like you
make decisions based on what you perceive the future value of something is going to be.
Right.
And, you know, in baseball, you make decisions and you hand out a lot of money based on like, well, this guy's been really good up to this point. He'll probably be really good in the future. And that's not really the case.
Not really how it works. You get paid for past performances and, you know, usually the team ends up going in the wrong direction.
It's very strange. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
One more?
Let's do one more. Let's see who's got.
Ryan Wilcox.
All right.
Ryan Wilcox says, "What's the best midnight snack to suppress all my Rockies Twitter moments when they lose?" Alcohol.
Whiskey.
There's nothing but booze. Nothing but booze. That's what it is. Actually, these are good ones to end on because there are two of them that are related to the same thing. From Nick Dowd at 303 to NYC, how do I fight the nagging sense that life is utterly meaningless or without purpose? And will the Rockies ever call up Tom Murphy? Those two are related. And then Lance Oles at LMFO, he said, if/when Tom Murphy gets called up, is Tony Walter's defensive baseball IQ enough to keep his spot, or would we rather have Chris Destructo Beam Iannetta and his veteran experience?
This is a fascinating conversation right
now. Yeah, this is kind of a million-dollar question right now.
Tony Walters has been one of the worst hitters in all of baseball this year. You can't really argue with that. I mean, on the year, Tony Walters is hitting what? He's hitting 130 in 69 at-bats.
Oh, boy.
He has a 464 OPS. That's bad even for Tony's MLB career. Like, I mean, that's one of the worst hitters in baseball. Now, on the other hand, Tony Wolters, 2 years ago, was one of the better defensive catchers in baseball. Last year regressed in that a lot. And that could be based on how defensive metrics are graded for framing and for catchers, et cetera, et cetera. This year, Tony Wolters is grading out as one of the best defensive catchers in baseball in terms of framing pitches, in terms of stealing strikes. He has been outstanding. Now, Chris Iannetta, on the other hand, was signed to a moderate contract in the offseason, I think 2 for $8, something like that. And he started off pretty hot, and he has been awful since. He's hitting .209 on the year, an OPS under 700. In the month of April, he hit .164. In May, it's been better. He's hitting .194. He hasn't been walking the same way we see Chris Iannetta have done in the past. The power is seemingly non-existent. He has 2 home runs in May, none since May 11th. I don't know. Tommy Murphy's killing it in AAA. That's no surprise. He kind of does that all the time. He's hitting .306 with 11 home runs, 31 ribbies, OPSing just over 1,000 in AAA. I don't see them cutting ties with Chris Iannetta. I mean, they like his veteran presence. You know, he calls a good game, whatever you want to call it. The pitchers seem to like throwing to him. The pitching staff has been fantastic this year. Tony Wolters is getting a lot more starts because of his defensive prowess. Now, who do you take out? If you lose Tony Wolters, you lose a hole in the lineup, of course, but you also lose the defense. I don't think Tommy Murphy is graded out that well on defense, and that's kind of why he's probably been stuck in Albuquerque for so long. The offense has always been there with him.
Yeah.
So, and I don't see them taking out Iannetta either, unless you are a team that carries three catchers. You have Murphy and Iannetta do the catching. Tony can play. He can catch. He can play second, whatever. But then again, Tony Wolters is only valuable to this team as a catcher because of what he does defensively.
Yeah.
And right now, I think you're seeing that is more important than the offense. I think the pitchers love throwing to him. They love getting the stolen strikes. They love all that he brings to the table. And I don't think we're going to see a change anytime soon because of that reason. If Wolters wasn't grading out as well defensively as he was, he would have been gone a month ago in theory. But he's not. He's been elite. So it's hard because I know they like Iannetta. He's been around the team for a long time. I don't see a change in that regard. I think they want to wait till Iannetta to turn around and keep Tony up there for his defense.
If this is like Rockies franchise history in a nutshell, if the Rockies could somehow combine Tom Murphy's offense with Tony Wolters' defense, they would have developed a very good catcher. It's not easy to develop catchers. In a Rockies franchise history especially, they've never really been able to develop good catchers. Chris Iannetta is the one, and Dan O'Dowd had a Dan O'Dowd moment with him and just decided to hate him for some reason and push him out a few years ago. But this is a tough spot right now because Tony Wolters is so good defensively at the moment that you keep him on the roster for that reason. I think he becomes a much more glaring offensive issue because everybody around him is so glaring as well, which is kind of ironic because you would think, oh, if the offense is good and Tony Wolters is a black hole, is the one black hole, he would really stand out for that. But I think it's more disruptive that he's another bat that's really struggling in a lineup full of bats that's struggling, and you think like, well, they need anything to get better. You have this guy who can give him a spark in AAA. Why is Tony Wolters there? I mean, defensively, he really is that good right now. So this does make it very difficult.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a fascinating conversation to see where that one goes. So we'll see.
Yeah. So this is a lengthy episode this week.
It was.
We did some good work for all you people. It's a free show. You jerks.
Enjoy it.
That'll do it. We'll wrap this one up for this week's episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Buy our shirts, purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com. Also, I finally can have a life again. Broadcast seasons are over for me, with the exception of a couple of international tournaments. But until like November, I have like a life. So I'll be at Coors Field a little bit more these days. So if you're heading down to Coors Field, let us know with the PDP, and maybe we'll be there and we'll get a chance to say hello. And I'm very excited to have a life. Very excited. It's going to be great. That'll do it for this week's episode. He's Anthony. I'm Tyler. We'll talk to you next week.
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye.